Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollack Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack, the only show of its kind. You can call us and ask us a legal question on any legal subject. We are injury attorneys, but we bring the show to you as a public service to answer your questions, get you connected with the right sources, and maybe help you over the first hurdle, second hurdle. Telephone number 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. If you want to go there and look at the podcast, we have all the podcasts of these shows and all the podcasts of our injury shows. We do an injury show every weekend. It airs on Sunday in various stations in Denver and in the mountains on Saturdays and Sundays, various other stations. We're going to touch a little bit on hit and run today. Hit and run is a devastating experience. But, you know, Brad, I don't think a lot of people understand that when, you know, when you're a pedestrian, you're in a hit and run, that their own car insurance applies to them for recovery of their damages, because they're wondering, where did the person go? What am I supposed to do?
Well, it can not only apply to them, their own car insurance, but if they have a resident relative that they're living with who has insurance, it may apply to them. There's a lot of different avenues where underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage will apply. The biggest part that you have to be concerned about is that you get it.
Right.
Because there are so many people who don't get it. And I can't tell you how many times and how many people you have a deal where there's they get hurt and they're upset that the at-fault driver has very little insurance. But when we go to their insurance, we find they have very little too, or they have none. It's so important for everybody out there to get the insurance that they can, the highest amount of insurance they can. We've talked many, many times on this show that the most dangerous thing you do in a day for most people, now there are some people who have very skier jobs, I guess, but for most people, the most dangerous thing you do in any given day is you drive. And that's where you have the greatest potential of getting hurt.
You know, it's been a while since we looked at those statistics, but in Colorado, the last time we looked at 24%, so let's just round it up to 25%, one quarter of the drivers on the streets in Colorado have no insurance. And so when you're hit by a hit-and-run driver, they hit you. If you're a pedestrian, then your own car insurance applies to you. If you're on a bicycle and you're hit by a hit-and-run, your own car insurance applies to that. But I think a lot of people don't understand that that's their uninsured motorist part of the coverage. That's why they want it as high as possible. And you're right, we preach this all the time. So on a hit-and-run, the driver's gone, nobody can find him. It's a crime. It's multiple crimes, actually. And depending on the seriousness of the injury, it's a crime to leave the scene. It's a crime not to render aid and assistance. Certainly, it's a crime to engage in a hit and run. But that doesn't solve the civil side of the problem. That doesn't solve if you can't work or pay any of your medical bills. And so people say, well, how do I get that solved? What do I do? What you do is you get that on your own car insurance policy. And, you know, we get asked questions all the time. Do you mean that I can recover on my own car insurance policy if we can't find the other driver? And that means my own UM for all my damages, you know, like medical bills, Brad, pain and suffering, physical injuries. You can recover on your own UIM coverage when this happens.
Yeah, that's the important part of it. It's the security you need to make sure that you're protected. In this day and age, really, if you're going to want to be protected, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to try and take care of yourself. And I know at times when you're paying that insurance bill, you're thinking, why am I doing this? Especially when you haven't had an accident or when things haven't been there and nothing's gone wrong. And, you know, I guess you should consider yourself lucky and fortunate if you don't get an accident and you never have to use the insurance.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we say that with our house insurance. We say that with our health insurance. You should be saying that with your car insurance too. It's just so important, though, that people realize that uninsured, underinsured motorist and policy is there. And it's hard to read sometimes.
Right.
Especially if you have multiple cars. It's hard to read. Your agent, I believe, has a responsibility and should honor that responsibility of helping you understand what that deck page says. Because I think a lot of people don't really understand what that deck page says. It can cause a big problem.
Right. You know, many times Brad and I just cringe in our law office. We just talk about it all the time. We cringe when we hear all these either ads or people saying, hey, I can save you money on your car insurance. I can save you $300 a year. I can save you $125 a month. I can save you. Well, yeah, you can save you, but if you're in one of these events, you need to understand what the UM-UIM coverage is all about. UIM stands for underinsured motorist coverage. UM stands for uninsured motorist coverage. It's that simple. It's a line item entry on your policy, on your deck sheet, and you need the highest limits that you can afford. And it's not as expensive as everybody thinks. You know, and if the other person doesn't have any insurance, even if they stay on the scene, even if they're not a hit and run driver, that will still kick in. Your UM coverage will still kick in. If the other person has very little insurance, then that's when your underinsured motorist coverage kicks in. So let's explain that a little bit more. So Brad, the person who hits you, they only have the minimum, state minimum of $25,000 of liability insurance, but your medical bills are now $75,000 and you're going to have neck surgery in the future. How does that get covered? By your own car insurance policy.
And that's exactly it. Your own car insurance policy will step in. Now, there's a lot of you out there thinking, well, wait a minute, I've got health insurance, that'll cover it. You want to watch out because there's going to be deductibles in your health insurance. When you get the car insurance money, it's going to be money that you can use towards that deductible. You can pay your bill. You can pay your health insurance. Extra car insurance also can cover your lost income.
Right.
It's going to be important. And I haven't seen too many health insurance policies that cover lost income. So, you know, that car insurance policy, even if you think you have the greatest health insurance policy in the world that's going to cover stuff, that car insurance policy can step in and help you and is going to pay you for other losses that you have. So more power to you if you have a great health insurance policy. But then what are you going to do about that lost income? What are you going to do about the additional losses you have that you need money for that isn't there? And you're saying, well, wait a minute, how do I get paid for my pain and suffering, for my loss of enjoyment of life, for the disability I now have and for things that the health insurance coverage doesn't cover? And that's why you've got to be careful that you can't think that these other insurances will pick it up. And that's what I think a lot of agents tell people. I think a lot of agents simply say, hey, you know, don't worry about it. You don't need to pay for all this because you've got health insurance. So why do you need MedPay? And why do you need underinsured motorist coverage and uninsured motorist coverage? Well, I'll tell you why. Because your health insurance isn't going to be there for all the different expenses and losses you experience in an accident.
Well, it's pretty simple. That's a really good point. Because if you're injured in an accident, your health insurance is going to do what? Pay your medical bills. Period. And as Brad just said, what about your lost wages? What if you can't work for 2 months? What if you're out of work for a couple of weeks and you have to work part-time? That doesn't cover by your health insurance. What covers that? Yes, if the other person does not have enough insurance, then your own car insurance company and policy under UIM and UM covers that. The health insurance company coverage doesn't pay for your physical injuries. It doesn't pay for, as Brad just said, your loss of quality of life, your pain and suffering. It just doesn't do that. And so you shouldn't waive these documents with your own coverages, and you should be very careful. You know, people call us all the time and ask us questions. You just call our law firm, and I'll get on the phone with you. Brad will get on the phone with you, and we'll talk about your insurance coverages. It's that easy. Okay, yeah, Bell and Pollock Legal Show. The telephone number is 303-713-8255. We are here for you. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com, and it's an information-loaded website. You can get free copies of any of our books there. We have several ebooks you can download, or you can get a hard copy if you call Kevin right here in the studio right now. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We'll be right back. Bell, Brad Pollock. We've been doing the show for years. We're glad to do it. We are injury attorneys in our day lives right here on this show. It's a live show, call-in show on any legal subject. You want to talk about divorce, we'll do it. Estates, we'll do it. Wills, we'll do it. Property, we'll do it. Property contracts. And speaking of property contracts, don't forget about the consumer real estate show that follows us, Barry and Larry. They're very knowledgeable experts in their field. A lot of people use them. A lot of people call them. They know what they're talking about. They know what they're doing. And more importantly, they're on your side, the consumer. They are on the consumer side. Okay, you can call us at 303-713-8255. 8255, and in the mountains, 970-457-1009. And welcome to all of our listeners, 94.1 FM KEZZ, Steamboat Springs, KRDO, Colorado Springs, and KHOW right here in Denver. Sometimes I do the show up in Steamboat. Brad does it here. We try to cover all over the state as best we can. We do cases all over the state, big ones, medium ones, small ones, where accident and injury lawyers. But you know what? Brad and I look forward to this show every week because we can help you. We can answer your questions. And if you have questions on injuries or coverages or insurance, you can call us or go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's got all the podcasts. It's got video podcasts, audio podcasts. It's got our shows. You know, and the other thing is we keep harping on this. There's a button on our website, championsofthepeople.com, that you can push, and it goes through the whole thing about what you need to know and say before you ever make the first phone call to an adjuster. I mean, wouldn't you like to know that? You better know that. They know what they're doing. An accident is no ordinary day or event for you, but it is for them. They're highly trained, well-trained. Lisa from Colorado Springs is going to join us now on her divorce question. Welcome to Bell and Pollock, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in the process of a divorce, and my husband has been, soon to be ex, a small business owner for about 30 years, and it appears as if he's very much intentionally dissolving the business to present as if he has zero income right now. And is there any way I could, like, prove that, or I don't know. I just don't know what to do with that information.
I'll tell you what, Brad's a pro at answering this type of questions. I'm going to turn it over to him in a second,
okay.
But do you have an attorney?
I do.
Okay.
Okay, so go ahead, Brad.
And how long has the divorce been going on?
I filed July 1. We just recently presented our sworn financial documents.
Okay, when you said it appears that he's destroying the company or his business to stop from paying things, I don't want to get too personal into it, but is this a divorce that everybody knew was coming as he had a long time to do this, or it just started in April, or what's going on, or June, or what's going on?
No, it's kind of been something we had talked about for quite some time. But as I say, just he had two other business partners, and about a month ago, he just decided, I think I'm going to pull out of this business and liquidate. And I happen to see on his sworn financial docs, at least a draft version. I have yet to see the final version that he was presenting that he had zero income.
All right. Do you have children, by the way?
We have adult children.
Okay. That zero income trick is probably not going to work very well for him.
Okay.
What your lawyer needs to do, and your lawyer, I assume we'll know what they're doing, is going to go in and get, for instance, last 5, 10 years, maybe 10 years of tax returns for the business.
Right.
And beyond the tax returns, is going to go in and get the last 10 years of business records and documents. And if they claim they don't have them, then get them back to 5 years. But you want to try and get them for the time periods prior to the when you start talking divorce. And some businesses are obviously different from year to year and what's going to happen. And, you know, if, for instance, if you used to be in the real estate business, you're probably booming right now. And in a few years, you may not be booming.
Right.
Larry and Barry, forgive me for that if you're listening. But, you know, the thing that I'm saying is you get this 5, 10 years and you show a history. The courts have now dealt with very much the decision of people not to work or to be voluntarily unemployed or voluntarily underemployed in the face of a divorce. And normally what the courts are going to do is they're going to do two things. Number one, you know, what you'll be looking at is maintenance or alimony if you're entitled to that. And you're also looking at a division of the value of the assets.
Right.
And the court in that case will give you a heavier or give you more money out of other assets, for instance, the family residence, any retirement funds you've got.
Although, actually, in my case, I've been carrying him financially for so long that my concern is almost the opposite, that he'll get spousal support.
Well, and And, you know, he might be entitled to spousal support for maintenance, depending on what the cash flow is. And I want you to be careful. The court's going to look at cash flow and what people have to live and how long your marriage has been. But it also looks at assets that have been divided and whether or not you can create cash flow from those assets or whether or not that's sufficient to allow you to support yourself. But then the court's going to look again. If they're going to look and say, okay, he wants maintenance from you, but he's not working and he's pulled out of these partnerships and he's done it voluntarily. He's getting himself out of the work environment or out of the income environment. If your lawyer is putting together a nice compelling view of that and is putting together a nice spreadsheet and showing that to the court, most courts nowadays, and we've got a lot of judges in this state, they all look at things different, but most courts nowadays are not going to show much mercy to somebody who decides to start doing that on the eve of or in the face of a divorce.
Yeah, you know, my take on this thing, and Brad just hit the nail right on the head, because there's doctrines in divorce law called intentional unemployment and intentional underemployment, and it's designed for just this kind of scenario where one spouse comes in, mostly the person that has a business. It could be the man or the woman, but the spouse comes in and says, you know, I just sold my business or liquidated. It wasn't making any money, and I'm seeing in the divorce, I'm getting a divorce blues. And don't think judges don't look at this. They do. They're smart. Judges are smart.
Okay.
And they go, you know, so let me see. You had this business for, I'm making this up right now, 8 years, 10 years, 15 years. And 2 months before your divorce, you went out of business.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Here's what can happen, Lisa. Judges can say, okay, you tell me you don't make any money. You tell me you're destitute. You tell me this. Well, I'm going to look at your tax returns of your business. And so you may not be employed right now. You may have wound it on down and got rid of it and liquidated it. But I'm going to charge you with that amount of income. So I don't care if you're making it or not. I don't care what you're doing. I'm going to charge you, meaning I'm on your side of the ledger. I'm going to put that you're making X $1,000 a year, whether you really are or not, because you should be. See?
And Lisa, when you said he's pulled out of the partnership, are the other partners continuing the business?
No, they've all dissolved it together.
Okay, so and how long had that business been going on?
About 4 years, but he's been self-employed for about 30.
Okay, so if I'm the judge and I'm the lawyer representing you, what I do is I sit back and I look and I say, okay, let's look at this 30-year history and let's look at this 4-year history and let's look at how the business grew and let's look for a valid business reason to have dissolved the partnership, and there better be one when you're doing a divorce. Because as a judge, I look and I say, look, once that petition's filed, prior to the petition and divorce being filed, people can run their businesses, they can do things, and they can destroy a business just because they want to. But once that petition is filed, now they've got certain other responsibilities, and now they come under the jurisdiction of the court. And now I'm looking, and as the attorney for you, I'm looking and saying, I want to examine very carefully why this business is all of a sudden being dissolved after 4 years. Where was it headed? What were the projections? And what's happened now? And by the way, even if it's been dissolved, okay, for 30 years you've been in and out of businesses and you've been self-employed, but you always find a way to make money.
Right, right.
And I'm going to look and say, you know, any decision now to act contrary to that is going to be something that I'm going to really look at the court, and courts quite often are going to look at the spouse doing that and say, you're doing this in order to get more money from your soon-to-be ex-spouse, or you're doing this to avoid having to be held accountable for your own income, and courts don't buy it.
Right, and there's got to be a 30-year earning history, as you just said, and so they're not, these judges are smart. They go right through it. It's like a bankruptcy judge going through credit card statements. You know, you rented up $12,000 a day before you filed bankruptcy. Really, you're gonna see put that past me. And Brad is exactly right. They look at this, and then in the end result, they say, okay, you may not be making any money right now. Maybe you even had a legitimate business reason to liquidate your current partnership, but you have marketable skills. You have earning capacity and earning ability, and I'm going to charge your side of the ledger with X thousands of dollars of earning capability.
Now, okay, has the divorce just been started?
No, like I say, I filed July 1.
Yeah, but you said you just filed financial documents, so it sounds like you're just getting to the point where you're getting to the financial
exactly.
question.
Okay. So I think the next step is mediation.
Okay. Here's the thing, you know, in a way, doing this, dissolving it now, the question also is going to be, he's going to be under a microscope as far as what are you doing to get income? What are you doing for work?
Right. Okay.
This is a great economy out here. I mean,
exactly.
He should be employable, and if he's employable, then he's going to have to show. And you know, you want to watch out and not let him get away with. Once again, lawyer wants to not let him get away with this idea that I'm just going to tell the court I applied for different jobs. But you know, is he really applying? Is he out there looking for work? Is he out there applying for work? Has he called in all the favors and all the people he's known for 30 years? Is he really using like a headhunter to help him find work? Is he starting a new business venture? If so, why did he decide to do it now? And where's the progress of that business venture?
Yeah.
So I think if you bring enough pressure, you're going to show that the trick he's trying doesn't work, Lisa.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so very much. I really appreciate all you do.
Hey, you look us up if you want to talk during, you know, while you're going on and as months go by, give us a call. We'll talk to you off the air, too.
I will. Thank you both.
Thanks, Lisa.
Lisa, thanks for the call. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, and Steamboat Springs. We have a fabulous website, championsofthepeople.com. We're still trying to improve on it. There's all of our podcasts, all of our books, all of the tips there. Go to championsofthepeople.com. Hey, we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're talking law. This is a law talk show, not a political show. You know the drill. You can call us and ask us any question on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys in our day lives. We're here for you. 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, 970-457-1009. Joining us live right now on the air is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How you doing today?
Good. What's cooking?
Well, we got a couple of specials to run by you guys for the week. Our breakfast special is going to be a little bit of a different type of French toast grilled sandwich. It's going to be like a grilled cheese sandwich. We're going to do a couple pieces of French toast, grill them to a golden brown. We're going to melt some cheddar cheese on that, put a fried egg on top of that. That's going to be our breakfast special all week. And our lunch special is a request. It's a grilled croissant sandwich. It comes with cream cheese, sliced tomatoes, your choice of ham, turkey, or roast beef. We're going to serve that with a dinner salad on the side. That's going to be the lunch special all week. And don't forget, Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2. Every Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, it's all-you-can-eat taco and mobile bar. It's only $70.99. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. So we'll come and check that out each week. That seems to be growing in popularity. And always, as always, the umbrellas are up, and the bottomless mimosas are flowing for $10. So we've got all kinds of things going on. We've got big-screen TVs to watch your favorite game today. Tons of reasons to come down and hang out with the Caitlin's crew and hang out, have fun with us.
Today and tomorrow might be the best times for this deck, Eric.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it is gorgeous right now. So yeah, I can't wait.
Umbrellas, and you can sit on that deck and enjoy it. You know, the weather's predicting that come Tuesday or Wednesday, it's going to be awful cold out there. But
right. So come and squeeze in your last good times on our patio before we have to shut it down.
Right. That's exactly, you know, that's where I'm going to be, sitting out on the deck having a nice breakfast. That sounds like a great time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Hey, Eric, do you have carry out or take out, or as the Australians say, I think they say take away.
Take away, right?
Is that right?
We do.
Yeah?
Absolutely. You can call it in, pick it up. We even have a little delivery service that we have. You can check it out. It's called Doorstep Delivery, and we partner with them, and they'll bring it to you. So we got all kinds of ways to get food to you anytime.
You never told us that, to bring anything over to the studio. You never mentioned that to me.
Uh-oh.
How about those handheld burritos? What do you got going there?
You know, we do 1 for $3, 2 for $5. You can get those from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. You can get, basically the same smothered burrito we do, ham, bacon, sausage, carne adobada, carne asada. You can get our homemade red and green chili in those. Call them in. You can call those in as well. Hop in, grab them, hit them up to go. Those are growing in popularity as well. Absolutely.
One for $3 or $2 for $5.
1 for $3 or $2 for $5. Absolutely.
Hey, Eric, where are you located?
We're at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's in the Glendale Shopping Center.
Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, buddy.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. What's on your mind today? You can give us a call, 303-713-8255. We're here for you. If you want any of our books, They're free. You can download an ebook on our website, championsofthepeople.com, or you can call right here or call our law firm, and we'll send you a hard copy free. One of the books is Don't Get Hurt in the Same Accident Twice, Once in the Accident and Again on the Insurance Claim. Another book is Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run, and they are literal cowards. They maim people, kill people, and take off. And well, their motivation could be anything, but it's usually because they don't have insurance, they're drunk, they're stoned, they don't want to take responsibility. There's various crimes committed once they hit somebody and injure them and don't render aid and assistance. That's all covered in the book, as well as the insurance coverages that you need and want right now, with narrative step-by-step instructions. And I've said before, if you want my own personal deck sheet on my own car policy, I will send it to you. It shows you what to do. It tells you how to do things. You want the highest coverage you can get. Yesterday, we did a show. We've been doing a series of shows called Back to the Basics, the ABCs of car accidents and injuries, the ABCs. And yesterday, we were talking about insurance coverage. And, Brad, I don't think many people understand that once the at-fault party, the person who caused this injury, the cause this accident, injured you, they basically have no decision-making. It's their insurance company that calls those shots. It's their insurance company that hires and pays for lawyers for the at-fault party. It's the at-fault party's insurance company that decides if they're going to settle with you, decides if they're going to pay with you. But the most fascinating part about that, which we covered in the show yesterday that's going to air Sunday, tomorrow morning, the most fascinating part is when you get to trial, they force you to file a lawsuit because your medical bills are $25,000, and they say take $9,000, take it or leave it. They force you to file a lawsuit, and when you get to trial, what can you mention about insurance? Nobody knows about insurance.
Absolutely nothing. You can't mention there's insurance. You can't tell the jury, and, you know, as we talked about, since in a trial, the jurors can ask questions, and, you know, everybody's wondering what's that all about. And the way they ask questions is that they, after the everybody's questioned a witness, both sides, plaintiff and defendant, the judge will ask the jurors, do you have any questions for this person? And the jurors are allowed to write it out on a sheet of paper and give it to the judge. They all have their own notebooks. Each juror has their own notebooks, and they write out their questions to the judge. And the judge then looks and decides whether to give the question. I'm going to tell you, since that process started, I haven't had a trial yet where the jury doesn't, at some point, somebody asked, is there insurance? And if so, how much? But sometimes it's not how much, but it's always, is there insurance?
Always.
And always they have to be told, no, you don't get to know if there's insurance, because you're not supposed to be concerned about how the payment will be made or the source of any payment that's got to be made. You're just supposed to be concerned about how much the payment should be and if a payment should be made. And so what happens is insurance companies have been lobbied very hard to keep that away from Colorado juries. And I say Colorado juries because there are states that allow and that do say the jury should know whether or not a person has insurance. A jury should start with, at all times, believing there's insurance, because that's the law. And if you believe that defendant is obeying the law, then they better have insurance. And if the defendant doesn't have insurance, then the jury, I don't think, should have any concern or mercy for him anyway.
Well, the fact that the defendant, the at-fault party, has a very, very expensive attorney sitting there, they're not paying for that attorney, that's clue number one. Clue number two, most every case that goes to trial has an insurance on the other side. But before we get to Bill on a call, I want to you make yourself the juror. You ask a question, you write it down. Is there insurance in this case? It's given to the judge. And the judge usually doesn't say, well, no, you can't ask an insurance question. The judge doesn't even mention the word insurance. Well, the judge usually says, well, thank you for your questions. We can't ask those questions today. Thank you very much. Next witness. And that's how that works. Right now, joining us live is Bill from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Bill. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've been studying a little bit on this amendment to the Constitution. I think it's an amendment about Colorado Care, where they're going to try to make everybody in Colorado covered under insurance run by the state, a single payer type thing.
Right.
Have you guys studied that all, especially the impact it's going to have as far as the legal economy of things when you have an accident or something like that?
Well, when we start talking about what happens in an accident, let me tell you, the health insurance is a odd thing on how it coordinates with an accident. Let's say I have any kind of health insurance, including the one you're talking about, Healthcare Colorado. Once that accident occurs and a person's hurt and they pay the money, if it's the result of the negligence of another that this person is getting the medical care, they will send a letter to the injured person telling them that if you collect anything from the at-fault party, you have to pay us back for the medical care.
Wow, okay.
Okay, so what, and you know, one of the first fights we get into when we get into this kind of stuff is, first of all, we try to get our clients the greatest amount of medical care we can. Because obviously, the more medical care they get, the better medical care they get, the better opportunity they have to get better. And, you know, the whole idea behind medical care is to get somebody, return them to maximum health. But when that expense gets run up, the healthcare institutions have a right, it's called subrogation, they have a right of subrogation to get reimbursed from whatever is recovered in the lawsuit. And then the question starts coming up with things like, and these are sophisticated, but whether or not the client's been made whole with what's been paid to them or what's been awarded, or if there's enough insurance to even do that. Because let's say if I hurt you, Bill, and I only have $25,000 in coverage and you only have $25,000, but your bills are $75,000. Well, the amendment, the healthcare institutions, regardless of how it's there, even if it's through the Colorado healthcare programs, they want this money back, the $75,000 back, but all that's been paid is a total of $50,000. And so we get into real questions about how much gets paid back to the healthcare institution versus how much the injured person like you can keep in your pocket for lost income and for future expenses and for stuff that's not covered by the health insurance. So,
well, the thing about this Colorado care is everybody in Colorado is supposed to be covered under it. Does that mean you wouldn't have to take this on your car insurance? You wouldn't have to pay for something that's because you have to take this other Colorado care?
Okay, the difference is, and that's a great question. The difference is, let's say you're injured. Let's say you have $25,000 in medical bills, and let's say you have MedPay on your car insurance policy. Then MedPay will pay the $25,000, and when you recover from the at-fault party's insurance company, you do not, under MedPay, have to pay your car insurance policy back. If you have another type of health care, and there's $25,000 in medical bills, and you recovered from the at-fault party's insurance company, you probably will have to pay that money back to your other health insurance. So that's just one on the face huge difference. There's many nuances.
Do you guys have an opinion about this amendment?
No, no opinion. It's not a political show.
Well, I do have an opinion, but I can't talk about it. If you want to call me off the air, call my office. I'm happy to talk to you.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, I've been trying to study it quite a bit, and you know, they want everybody in the state. You know, I'm all for single payer, but I'm just not sure I'm for this single payer.
And you make a good point that you have to examine what the potential and what the amendment is. Try and make sense of it, Bill. And,
well, sounds like you're doing a studied effort there, and congratulations. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, in our radio lives, right here at KHOW and surrounding member stations, simulcast stations. Welcome. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Get your legal coffee and your legal bagel. We're ready to roll. We're ready to legal rock and roll. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. 303-713-8255. Don't forget about our website, championsofthepeople.com. Steve from Denver's joining us now. Good morning, Steve. Welcome to Bell and Pollock.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Just sitting around listening to you folks almost every weekend. I came up with a question. I have two children. One is living with the daughter living with the gentleman, and my son married. They don't have any assets, and I have approximately $3 million in real estate. And I am wondering if any way I can protect them in an event that they might divorce, since they are in a percentage, at a high percentage of the young couples divorce in their lifetime.
Okay, well, you know, Brad's going to give his take here in a second, but everybody understand that when you give your there's ways to do it, Steve, but there's when you give your children an inheritance and they're married and you don't really you really don't really like their spouse, or you wonder what's going to happen to your money. First of all, if you do nothing, and your child number one inherits half of the $3 million, child number two inherits half of the other half of the $3 million, when they get it into their marriage, the $1.5 million does not automatically all become marital property. The increase in value from that point in time forward does become marital property, and I know Brad can explain this.
Now, Steve, that's if, and Gary's 100% right, but there's one caveat there. When you transfer the asset, if it's property, it has to be maintained separate and apart. If your child puts their spouse on the deed, or includes them as far as ownership, it's presumed to be a gift. So the first thing I want to say, Steve, and we can get your name off the air and just give you references or referrals, you don't have to do it, but you need to sit down and talk to a lawyer that does probate and inheritance law to talk about potential family trusts that will protect this property. And at least spend an hour talking to him to get an idea of how this should be done. But here's basically the thing. If you're going to put it into a trust, you can probably protect it from your children's spouses for quite a while. If you put it into an irrevocable trust, you're going to have a good chance of being able to protect it not only against that, but also against potential claims in the event you end out needing long-term medical care and different agencies that would want to get that money. If you give it to them outright or leave it for them, once again, if they get your inheritance and if they do not put their spouse's name into ownership on that property, as Gary said, that inheritance will remain theirs, separate and apart from the marital estate. So what the court does, it sits down in a divorce and it goes, let's see what everybody has in the marital estate and let's see what's outside the marital estate. But here's what can happen. Judges have the right to determine how to divide up the marital estate based on what everybody's assets are, including those outside the marital estate. So,
the other thing I want to say is that everybody assumes in a divorce case, well, it's going to be 50-50. That's not true. You can have an 80% one way and 20% to the other spouse, 90%, 10%, because as Brad just said, the judge will take into consideration that spouse number one has $1.5 million in trust. And that, no, I'm not going to give the $1.5 million in trust under certain circumstances to the divorced spouse, but I'm going to take it into consideration.
Right. So the judge looks and says, well, you know, Steve's son has $1.5 million of property here that's income producing, and his wife has zero, and I've got another $200,000 to divide up into the estate of marital property. The judge may say, I'm going to give 3/4 of it to the wife and 1/4 to the son because he's still okay with the extra $1.5 million he got from dad. So that's why there's a lot of different ways to look at how you're doing it. Plus, Steve, and we can't get into it the show, and that's why I want to be able to make referrals to you and get you the right people. And I've got some good people for you to talk to. I want to make sure the timing is so important about when you do this, about what's available. And, you know, do you do a trust now to avoid what we call clawback rules from different agencies in case you get disabled? But do we wait and have it not vest into your children until later? So, you know, if the divorce happens now, even though they may be named in a trust or named in a will, nothing's vested, and then the court's not going to do anything. Because depending on what, if it's in a will, the court can say the guy can change his will.
Right, and you can have it vest. I mean, suppose you passed away today and you had a trust, and 10% of the trust vests in child number one right now. 20% vests in 5 years, 10 years. So there's different ways to do it, and the very sophisticated ways to do it. But just understand, a divorce is not a 50-50 division of property, because the judge wears two hats, a court of law and a court of equity. I've always found that to be fascinating. You can look it up on the history. But in the court of equity, they can take a lot of things into consideration. But I want to just give an example of pure math real quick. Suppose child number one gets $1.5 million inheritance and a separate property. So that's separate property. That's not going to go to the other spouse automatically. But the increase in value, let's say the $1.5 million increases to $1.8 million, right? And then they get a divorce 5 years later. So the increase of $300,000 from 1.5 to 1.8 then becomes marital property. Okay?
Yes.
So are we making sense to you, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think, I don't know if you have anybody helping you with this, but I'm going to, if you'll leave your name and number with Kevin, I'll just call you with some referrals. No obligation, no nothing. You won't have to worry about calling me if you don't want to, but I at least want to give you and put in your hands the people and the names. All right?
Well, I don't have anything going on. I'm still pretty good health and all that, but just never know.
Well, and that's exactly it. I just like to get it in your mind so you can start thinking about it. And, I'll refer you to a couple of lawyers who are very good at that and can at least make sure, and you're doing the right thing. You're doing it when you don't have to. And it's an excellent call, and it's an excellent thing for you to be considering.
That's a great point.
You're being able to say, hey, when I don't have to worry about it is the best time for me to start knowing what the laws are and the rules are so I can think about what I want to do.
Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
All right, Steve, stay on hold if you would, buddy.
I'll
put you on hold. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys. We do this show for you so that we can inform you. We try to help you on every subject. Sometimes we have to refer you to a further expert on different matters. We're glad to do it. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. Have you ever thought about some of these subjects? You know, what's the concussion protocol you see in the NFL? How does that apply to your child playing recreational sports in a recreational league or school sports? Can they go back into the game? We have an entire show on the Colorado concussion statute. Youth concussion statute. Very important. What kind of training do people need? Do the coaches need to be trained? What's the protocol? Injury attorneys, Bell and Pollock, our website, championsofthepeople.com, because we are your champions of the people. We didn't have no internet, but man, I never will forget the way the moonlight shined upon her head.